All right, welcome back, everyone. Here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are continuing to chat with more of our generalist commentators as we are wrapping up the show with Dana Lyons, fund manager based out of Chicago. Now, Dana, big picture, we chat with you pretty much every 2 weeks, and throughout this year, you've been very consistent, really playing off a playbook you outlined early in the year that was addressing general bear market action. That theory of more hitting singles rather than trying to hit a home run, skimming off whatever profits you can, and selling the rip rather than more buying the dip. The markets are continuing to trend lower, and while they haven't, let's say, broken or even tested out their June lows, boy, oh boy, it sure looks like they are heading in that direction. Dana, just reiterate that playbook that you are investing off of and how it continues to be relevant.
Right. Thanks, Corey. Well, it's really a, you know, basically a bear market playbook, and it could be in the micro term, more of a correction playbook. So you had the sell off, you know, from the beginning of the year into the June lows. You had a classic, what we call the bear market rally, that fooled a lot of people into thinking, okay, we're going back to new highs. You had the whole breath thrust crowd arguing for that. But the rug was pulled right where it was supposed to be. If indeed it was a bear market rally, we failed right where we should have. And now we're back down, breaking areas which I would have said, okay, if we are going back to new highs, if the bull market is intact and June was, you know, the ultimate low, we should be holding around these levels. And those were the levels hit in early September and pretty much in all of the markets. For example, the S&P around that 3,900 level, breaking all of those levels now, the small and mid caps breaking just yesterday and today. So I think that the notion that we're going back to the highs and that we've got the breath thrust head foretold that, and the whole sentiment analysis suggesting that we're going back to new highs, I think that's by the wayside now. I think that's been invalidated. I think a test of those June lows is in the cards now. Pretty. I don't want to say anything is obvious in the market, because when you start thinking that, then you know what they say. If it's obviously, it's obviously wrong. But all the signs are pointing to that now. We've already had, for example, some of the weaker markets around the world, looking at Europe especially, as have already been testing those summer lows and indeed breaking them now. So I think a test of those lows is in the cards, and then eventually another down leg to the bear market. So basically what we've been talking about for, you know, most of the year, that roadmap, like you stated, pretty much unfolding as planned. And until that changes, we'll continue to follow that that playbook.
Well, you've been spot on, Dana, and it kind of seems like your traditional ABC corrective move, where you have a down leg as the A leg, you have the up leg, which is the bear market rally, as a B leg, and then you have the next down leg, which is the C wave, which is kind of what you're talking about. If those June levels get tested again and they do break lower, do you have any specific targets for the S&P or for the Russell or for any of the markets? If that does break, would you be shorting it there, or would you just be looking at your indicators for something to resolve and then get back to the long side?
Yeah, no, we'll have targets definitely on the downside. We're already short. We typically like to short, especially in what I call more of a modern micro trading environment, where breakouts and breakdowns are less consistent, less reliable. So we like to sell and short into the strength, buy into the weakness. So we are short. We're slightly net short right now. We were more aggressively short, especially going into Jackson Hole. But we will, yeah, if we decisively break those lows, I'd like to see a test of those lows and then a reflexive rebound first, which should happen. But into any rebound like that, we would be certainly looking to more aggressively short. As you mentioned, with the exception being FR risk models, FR indicators that are that we track, and that which basically dictate our overall investment posture. If they somehow started to improve dramatically despite the weakness in the markets, then that would change our orientation for sure. But I don't expect that to occur. So I would expect a test of those June lows, maybe a temporary rebound, and then another down leg. Eventually, the next big spot, say, in the S&P 500, this is not necessarily a magnet, not necessarily target, but if we got down there, I would be certainly aggressively covering shorts and looking for a nice bounce on the S&P. That would eventually be around that 3,200 level. I would have to check the other indices, but I would expect the notion to be the same in many of those other indices, around corresponding with basically around that 61 retracement from the COVID lows. And we've got a number of, looking at the S&P, we've got a number of those FIB levels, not just from the COVID area, but some other extensions and retracements lining up in that in that vicinity as well.
So, Dan, it's not just the U.S. markets that are moving down. It really seems to be sector-wide that a lot of stocks simply continue to fade. We have seen the odd standout, like utilities, consumer staples. Those have held up generally better. But when you look to some other assets, supposedly safe haven assets, there is a contingency out there saying, why aren't these other sectors moving higher when I thought they were supposed to be a defensive play? What's your comment to this?
Sure. That's something that gets a lot of investors in trouble, I think, especially when they buy into a narrative as opposed to, you know, price action and the market data itself. I think a lot of people have gotten in trouble over the years, whether they're gold bugs or end of the world, the end of the world type crowd, who thought eventually that interest rates would be zero forever, that bonds would continue to be strong forever, or that gold would be, you know, at 2,500 by now, or, you know, a cryptocurrency, Bitcoin would be at 100,000 by now. It's a dangerous mindset when you start to put the narrative ahead of the actual data. And we've seen this in intermarket analysis throughout the years. What we do is, you know, judge each and every financial asset on its own merits. You know, the intermarket relationships are constantly changing. So you can't necessarily say, okay, the dollar's up, so gold's going to be down, or stocks are down, cryptos are going up, or anything like that. These relationships are always changing, and it's always driven by the market data itself. So you have to read that itself, including price action. So I would just, you know, caution against buying into a narrative and stick to the quantitative readings, the indicators, the market data, the objective analysis, the chart analysis, because that type of stuff doesn't lie. Whereas you might be correct in the narrative eventually, but it might take a decade to get there. So I think Ned Davis put it best when he wrote his book and titled it Making Money or Being Right, or maybe it was Being Right or Making Money. I forget which one, but the point is the sooner in your career that you decide, okay, I don't care about being right, I just want to make money. So when I'm wrong, you get out of a bad trade as quickly as possible, and all you care about is making money, whether it fits with your narrative or not. So, you know, we're wrong all the time. The sooner we admit that, sooner we recognize and acknowledge that, and that's aided by a lot of the quantitative indicators that we have that will shift and tell us that we're wrong, but the sooner we reverse out of those positions, the better off we are, even if it means that, you know, it goes against what I said on this podcast 2 weeks ago. The sooner you realize that, okay, it doesn't matter what you say, as long as you got your money position in the right direction, in the right markets, that's all that counts. That's all our clients care about. If we, you know, stuck to our guns and just wanted to be right all the time, and no matter what price action was doing, we wouldn't have that many clients left.
That's such a great point, Dana, and I hope people take that advice to heart, that it's far more important to make money than it is to be right, and it's so more important to follow the data than it is to follow the narrative. But just one more follow-up question on the intermarket analysis. There are a lot of investors on Wall Street that use that approach, and they're pitting one asset class against another and looking at previous analogs. And there's a lot of people that use ratio charts, which they would argue is technical analysis, and they would pit gold versus the S&P or bonds versus the S&P or the dollar versus bonds. And they will use those ratio charts believing that they are using technical analysis, which they are. How do you look at that as far as using ratio charts to pit one asset class against another?
Sure. I mean, none of that feeds into any of our models directly. I don't have anything against ratio charts, but it's the same thing. You have to ask yourself, is this helping me make money? Because I see people pit like gold against like an equity, an individual, like gold versus Apple. Okay, maybe there's like a clear trend line broken or something, but how are you going to make money on that? Are you actually buying gold and shorting Apple, and in what increments? So it comes down to, okay, it might look good on a chart and it might make sense, but is it really helping you make money? So I have nothing against ratio charts. In fact, you know, we've used them in the past to basically dictate whether we're in, you know, a risk on or a risk off type of environment, and use them basically as confirmation maybe with what some of our models are telling us. But in terms of, okay, how is it actually, you know, directly helping us make money? That's a tricky point. So I would say, yeah, I have nothing against them, but you have to ask yourself, is it actually directly helping us make money? And if the answer is no, then kind of it's a waste of time, right?
Dana, we're going to wrap it up there. I think that's some of the best investment advice. And hey, this is not investment advice, but some of the best commentary you can give in terms of, you need to get out of sometimes that narrative that keeps playing in people's heads, especially if it's not making you money. We constantly hear people say, well, long term, this will work out. Fact of the matter is, if you're losing money right now, especially if it continues on for a period of time, that's not good. So you could have bought the stocks for cheaper. You could have been sitting in cash. You could have done a lot of other things with that money rather than get stuck in losing trades, which unfortunately this whole year has been a pretty tough trading environment. Dana, thank you as always for joining us on the weekend show. Everybody, thanks for tuning in this weekend. As always, please go back through our website and podcast throughout the week. Share your thoughts with us on the companies and guests that we are having on. We love hearing from each and every one of you. I will post Shad's and my email in that weekend show posting. Dana, everybody, have a great rest of your weekend.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.